So you ready to do this? All right, let's roll with the news.
It's time for the most insightful wrestling show today. Wrestling Weekly is on the air.
Are we ready?
I'm very excited.
Please join us in the chat room at WrestlingWeekly.com to submit questions for tonight's guests.
Hello, this is Mick Foley, and you are listening to Doc Young.
He is my friend.
And the inimitable Les Thatcher.
He's a legend. He's one of the greatest of all time.
You're listening to Wrestling Weekly.
The most dominant force in this business today.
And it all starts tonight.
Yeah.
We're the stars of this piece of...
And now, your host for Wrestling Weekly, Doc Young and legendary Les Thatcher.
Doc Young and Les Thatcher here with you on Wrestling Weekly. And Les, we've got a packed show for everybody today.
Boy, we sure do. We've got Bruce Mitchell's going to join us from the Torch for the Hot Topic.
Hot Topic's going to be a good one.
All right, and then we're going to have Harley Race on. We're going to talk a little bit quickly about the two Legends conventions, the one in Charlotte and the one up in Pennsylvania, which just took place in the past month. And about the camp that he's having September 21st through the 24th with Noah and the Noah Stars. And then we've got Buff Bagwell has promised you he's going to be with us tonight.
Yeah, I don't think he'll be no-showing too.
And Nigel McGuinness.
Nigel McGuinness,
who is
also
going to be on Heat tonight. I intend to tape if I don't get a chance to watch it firsthand, and Nigel is one of my students, and man, what a great story. If anybody deserves a shot at a contract, man, this guy's paid his dues, and I'm tickled to death he's getting the notoriety now. Anyway, yeah, we got a packed show. a couple things I want to touch on. First, I got my J.J. Dillon book. I highly recommend it. I'm not even like half through it, but it's just a great read.
Is
it as detailed and as I assumed it would be, you know, knowing J.J. the way he is with details, and he is a detail man. You know, I don't know that there's a Monday Night War brewing, but tying these things together, WWE's legal maneuvers over the past couple weeks with names, right? Billy Kidman can't be Billy Kidman, and Bubba Ray Dudley can't be Bubba Ray Dudley. And,
right. Just incredible.
And, yeah, who... could just be PJ, I guess. I don't know. But, you know, which it seems kind of trivial in a way, but I guess they're, you know, maybe. And then if you think, well, okay, some of these guys are going to end up going to TNA. TNA is now has their show's going to run a second time at midnight on Mondays. Spike has talked to UFC about doing a live show heads up with Raw's debut on USA, which has now gone to 3 hours.
Wow.
So, become a pissing contest.
Yes, it has. And,
to a degree, but you know what? If it sets fire under everybody and it makes for a better business, then I'm all for it. I mean, but again, I don't know that any of these things are connected, but that's just with too much time on my hands and too little to do. like Lincoln and McGowan, I'm thinking, okay, maybe that's what the deal is. I don't know.
It's going to be great. I'm psyched up for TNA coming to Spike TV. I am psyched up for what's going to happen in the next few months in wrestling. It's going to be good.
Well, you know, it's going to be a big... Well, people are going to change their viewing habits to a certain degree. I mean, it's... And you know, in the next 12 months, it'll be, you know, interesting to see what does transpire.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's more... I guess they're shoring up the girl division, TNA, talking about Homicide, coming in maybe to work with... Conan as a partner once they break up Three Live crew and all sorts of things. But, again, you know, what's going to work and what's don't, I don't know. You know, and that's the amazing thing. Nobody else does either. So it's one of the things is, you know, we'll just have to see how WWE reacts to whatever TNA does,
right?
Which is basically they're in the you know they're in that position where they don't have to prove anything, they just have to basically go on defense at this
it's
point.
It's true, but we could be on the verge of another boom.
Well, you know what? I think that's great. If it puts more money in everybody's pocket, including the boys, I think, you know, that's fine.
Absolutely.
Yep.
We got a lot of good stuff coming up on the show today. As we said, Bruce Mitchell from The Torch coming on.
Yes.
And he is going to be doing the Hot Topic, and we don't know what the Hot Topic is.
Well, Bruce may be crying if he's a Panthers fan.
It's possible.
I don't know, but, you know, my wife is, she's from Charlotte. Anyway, they lost to New Orleans today, which, you know, in a way, I mean, it's with the whole hurricane thing, my God, what a downer that has been, those poor people. And, it's so great to see everybody pulling together, the athletes and entertainers and everything. I think that's tremendous. But anyway, New Orleans did beat the Panthers in Charlotte today, so Bruce might be hot about that.
Yeah. the old Panthers. I was going to get into something about copyrights and trademarks that we've already talked about, but Big Van Vader, old Vader, has signed a Legends contract with WWE.
But from what I understand, that's been a while. I mean, like, okay, they're just making a big, you know, announcement about it now, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, he just didn't do that.
Right.
But again, they're what, circling the wagons, closing the ranks, whatever the expression may be.
Mm-hmm. They
I mean, it's not that Billy Kidman's not going out and perform the same, but they're not going to allow him to be Billy Kidman. And the only way you can say that is the former Billy Kidman in WWE, now called, I don't know, whatever.
Right.
But, again, like I say, on one hand, I see it as being trivial. On the other hand, you know, it's paying attention to business.
Yeah, WWE had sent a cease and desist letter to the owner of BigVanVader.com saying they own the trademark. Now there's some controversy going around as to who really owns it. PW Insider is claiming that Lucasfilm owns the rights to Vader, and that WWE abandoned their trademark on it in 1998, and that Leon White, who is Big Van Vader, has never had the trademark for himself.
You know what? Probably a lot. And if you go way back, way to my time, you know, Harley Race, we were talking about one of our guests, Harley Race is Harley Race because that's the way it was born.
Right.
You know, but there's so many guys that back then, I don't think anybody ever bothered with anything like that.
Mm-mm.
You know, so, and Vader comes more out of the old school times, you know, and I'm sure it's just something that never crossed his mind. He was always Vader.
Right.
Right? Leon White was always Vader. And, we had a little deal, and I may have mentioned this to you once before. The very first Pillman show we did here in 1998, there was a guy, an independent wrestler, a friend of mine from Fort Wayne, who the Bounty Hunter. We had advertised that, and, of course, that was seen on a lot of websites and, you know, in some national advertising. And I got an email from a guy in California who said, well, I've got that trademark. But
really?
Yeah, which maybe he does.
Uh-huh.
But I did find out from our lawyer, and but how long has the guy in Fort Wayne been using it? Well, he's been used this long. When did this guy trademark it at this point?
Right.
So the guy in Fort Wayne could still use it. It was what they call the grandfather law.
Right.
Or something like that, because this kid indeed had trademarked it, but Jay had been using it longer.
Mm-hmm.
So they couldn't stop him from, he couldn't have taken the name that day and started with it.
Right.
But because he was using it longer than this guy had a trademark. So there are loopholes in that thing.
Yeah, and it's part of the business that it's becoming commonplace now.
Yeah.
And something that wasn't around before.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, the business. Well, it's a lot like baseball, football, and basketball. When I was a kid, you know, if you played pro baseball, football, or basketball, you had an off-season job,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's just, you know, and then once the money got bigger, then they got agents, and then they got, you know, now they all everybody's a corporation, right, or an LLC,
right? Mm-hmm.
Ray Lewis LLC.
Yes.
But yeah, it's a different time. But I guess if WWE owns the rights to them, then they've got the right to say yay or nay. I mean, it's business.
It is. We've got a great show for you coming up tonight, and it's packed. So we're gonna be moving.
Yeah.
So we've got coming up next. We've got Bruce Mitchell from The Torch. He's going to join us for the hot topic of the week. Also, coming up on the show, Nigel McGuinness, the ROH Pure Champion. We've got Harley Race coming up and Buff Bagwell. Lots of good stuff on the way. Stick around. It's Doc Young and Les Thatcher on Wrestling Weekly. We'll be right back after this. Doc Young and Les Thatcher back with you at Wrestling Weekly. Got a lot of good stuff planned for you today, including Nigel McGuinness, Harley Race, Buff Bagwell, and much, much more. But right now, it's time for the Hot Topic. From the Pro Wrestling Torch, we've got Bruce Mitchell on the line. Bruce, thanks for joining us.
No, it's great. Oh. I can't believe I did that. Excuse me. It's great to be here. What an auspicious debut. And, of course, I've been a longtime fan. I've followed this career all my life. I'm Les Nessman, so it's really an honor to be on with Mr. Nessman.
Excellent.
I love the show, KRP in Cincinnati. That was great.
Listen, I wasn't going to say anything about the Panthers losing to the
but now.
The four Saints beaten down emotionally and mentally and physically couldn't even practice the last weekend.
It's a feel-good story of this Sunday. Come on now.
But now the gloves are off now.
All I have to do, I'll put a stop to it. I'll just tell Bruce I'll call Jimmy.
Oh, that's all right. I'll fold like a pup tent on that.
So, Bruce, what's the hot topic over at the Torch this week?
I really think it's the television maneuvering we saw this week with, Spike TV last week announced that they were going to run a UFC special on Monday night, October the 3rd, which coincidentally happens to be the night that Raw moves back to the USA Network. So, Vince McMahon and Raw announced that they were bringing back Steve Austin, Mick Foley, Triple H, Vince McMahon. I'm probably leaving somebody out. Hulk Hogan.
Katie Vick.
Yeah, I believe she's coming back after 3 days. And they also just Friday night announced that they were going to make the show a 3-hour show. So I think the stakes are really high on October 3rd, and we may have a wrestling war going on. We may have our next Monday Night War, and it's not really TNA versus WWE, even though TNA's got a Monday Night slot now. It's UFC and mixed martial arts being seen by television executives as the new pro wrestling with not quite the vulgar undertones, which is pretty amazing because, it used to be UFC, they couldn't even run shows because they were the human cockfight. So,
right.
Several years later, here we are. We may have a new wrestling war on our hands. I think it's a really big week.
The listeners here are probably tired of hearing me reiterate this, but I'll mention it to you. Amazingly enough, you're talking about the UFC thing. Back in April, Terry Funk said to a group of us at a barbecue out in Vegas, he said, "What does UFC remind you of?" And he said, "That's pro wrestling's biggest challenger. They just don't realize it yet." And he said, "What does it remind you of?" And of course, everybody's just sitting there. Well, what? He says, "Our business in 1960." He said that they understand manipulation now. He said, "I'm not saying it's a work." He said, "But they understand manipulation."
Terry Funk's book, which I just thought was an excellent book.
Oh yeah.
He called this. I mean, he really saw it coming, and I'm not surprised to hear you tell that story, just because by the end of the book, he was like, it's coming back to a more serious, shoot-oriented style. And, Les, all those years you worked the territories and all the different things that you did and the places you went, it wasn't a shoot, but most of the people believed it was a shoot.
Right.
And that's a real similarity there. It's that, and they do that manipulation of trying to get the most attractive matchup that will draw in the most fans and the fans will spend the most money at. And that's where WWE and UFC are really similar. And I'm one of those people, I believe it's pro wrestling. I believe that whatever entertainment you can get somebody to pay their money to see that's based on a fight, that's pro wrestling. Boxing's more of a sport, but even that has that element to it. But, yeah, I think Terry Funk, very smart and saw you know, saw ahead of the curve, and he's done that his whole career.
Yeah, he has. He certainly has been a visionary. Well, you know, I mentioned to Doc at the top of the program, with all this legal manipulation over trademarks and names and so forth has been going on, and I said, you know, sitting at home with too much time on my hands, thinking about that, and what you've just mentioned, the extra hour added to Raw on its initial run on USA, plus the UFC going live, heads up on Spike, and then Spike putting TNA on, you know, the Monday nights on the second run. I said, we got a war brewing, and I said, the legal maneuvering, as petty as I thought it was at first, and you know, unimportant, I see what, the, you know, they're setting up for a battle, I think.
And, you know, Vince McMahon, when he has a battle, does play hardball.
Yes.
And you can say, you know, and I understand the frustration of the Dudleys and of Justin Credible and those guys who really worked hard for WWE, for that company all those years, and gave a lot, and they just want to make a living on an indie scene that really, you know, the people that go to indie shows, I think they're already watching and paying, you know, buying WWE product. They just want something extra.
Sure.
Most of them. And, you know, you can see where they'd be so frustrated, but you have to legally protect your intellectual property. And also, if it gives, you know, a 1% advantage to TNA or to your competitor, you don't want them to have that. I mean, that's just, I do understand where they're coming. I do understand where they're coming from. I wish that those legal things weren't like that and people could move back and forth. And, you know, it's better. I think it's better for the fans to have all these choices. But if you're in a war, I understand. The other good thing to me is, like, if this does turn into a real war, WWE will get the creative and the product in the ring will get more disciplined, and we'll see more of what fans want to see, and
yeah,
kind of less this political maneuvering, because that's what I don't think we would have seen Stone Cold Steve Austin be Stone Cold Steve Austin unless there had been a WCW to fight against, and unless they were losing that war, and then they had to just go with what – they had to go with the right thing instead of the right political thing.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
You know, I'm excited about it.
Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, I see this whole thing as brewing up, and it's a good thing, I think, for the business, because if TNA can get a decent foothold, and I don't see them being competitive in terms of numbers, you know, ratings, but if they just get a decent foothold and start bringing their numbers up a little bit, and then UFC, if Spike sees that they do something on that Monday night, I've already heard that could possibly be like a, you know, done four times a year on specials anyway.
You know, that could be, and if TNA has lasted and lasted and lasted, and yes, it's mostly because Panda has just kept with them. But whatever the reason, if TNA can, like you said, get a decent foothold and prove a little something, they could end up with a primetime slot, and they could end up with being the regular Monday primetime slot, and at that point, we are off to the races.
Then I think we go back more to the attitude time instead of seeing facial tumors and Kerwin White and with a golf club.
Right.
We're going to see more wrestling again.
You know, Viscera and Val Venus versus the Heartbreakers and all this stuff. But, I mean, I was watching that Monday night, and I thought, boy, this is not where this business is going right now. I mean,
you know, let me,
and I mean, some of those performers are very good, but it's like it just this silliness stuff. I mean, that has a tendency to go away. But if there are new fans who are expecting more athleticism, more blood and guts based on what, I mean, more, you know, competitiveness based on what they've learned from Ultimate Fight, then that'll spill over into WWE, too, and into TNA.
Yeah, exactly.
It's already on its way doing that. We've seen some knockouts, you know, in wrestling over the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, we have with Matt Hardy and Edge, and I think WWE has a key guy poised already, and that's Kurt Angle.
Mm-hmm.
I think that Kurt Angle can, you know, comes across as, because he is, he comes across as badass. He can talk, he can perform, he can do all that stuff, and he has that credibility. And, you know, even in a world where, you know, we're the fictional TV, it still comes across that way. And, you know, they can feed into that. But it's real, you know, Vince McMahon, and I think Vince McMahon and the television networks decided. Vince McMahon decided when he brought back all these guys so early. I mean, you don't bring back Mick Foley and Steve Austin and Hulk Hogan back on the same show. You spread it out and take advantage of it. He's going for the knockout punch right off the bat.
Yeah, exactly.
You may be right. We'll see.
Yeah, with UFC, you know, being real and wrestling being scripted, they're not exactly going to be able to be UFC, but what do you think that wrestling will have or try to do, you know, to get the fans on to watch their product.
Well, you know, it's a real interesting thing because audience-wise, WWE is always, I think, is always going to beat UFC as far as sheer eyeballs watching TV.
Mm-hmm.
But their demographics are, you know, a little bit higher, but they don't have, you know, and they, but they, are, their demographics are a little bit higher in age, but they aren't as well in economic situations. So in other words, you can't sell advertising based on demographics that WWE gets at the normal rate. They have to discount their rate. UFC, on the other hand, can do half the rating and still get more advertising money coming in and still charge more for their big show tickets and all that kind of thing. So, I mean, that, you know, it's a real interesting, the both situations have their advantages and disadvantages. And, you know, I think, you know, UFC comes in with that special that first night. They draw 2.0. We've got a real war. They draw 1.0, and, you know, we may not have one yet. So, I mean, that first night is going to tell a tale. And also, you know, is WWE going to increase with all that star power? Or are they going to, you know, the normal 3.9, 4.0? Are they going to go down because they moved? Or, you know, what's going to happen? So it's going to be quite the night to be following this business.
Absolutely. Les.
What? I'm just awed by it all. No,
it is. It
no,
is.
You know, I agree with what Bruce is saying. And, you know, it's, and it's, it, like, it, they're not going to jump on UFC's not, he's exactly right. The TV is still always going to belong to WWE.
Mm-hmm.
But if TNA takes a little piece of the action, if UFC takes a little piece of the action, now you're chipping away at a base that's already dropped over the last 4 or 5 years.
Right.
And, you know, and the other thing is that TNA, you know, gets up to where, not that they're about, not that it's WCW and they're about to beat WWE, but where they're making money and they're viable, then they have some real advantages in that they don't run those house shows, that you don't have that schedule, and that you can make good money and then book yourself on the weekends and all that thing. We've already seen Mick Foley benefit from a bidding war. We've seen Matt Hardy benefit, not creatively, but I'm sure monetarily, from the bidding war, and that's good for the wrestlers. That they have somebody, you know, that you have two people bidding for your services, that's going to be good for them, and they can get better deals. And that also means maybe some loss of control managerial-wise, which may not be so good for the product, and it may be good on the other hand. So, I mean, I think guys are going to feel more validated, more, you know, I know that there's a lot of mid-carders in WWE are hoping for TNA to kind of take the next step so that they can, you know, so they don't have to just kind of accept what they have to accept. And,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's good. I think that part's good for the business, too.
Let me ask you your opinion here, Bruce. I've been stumping for these two things, TNA, if they mean to really get serious about this. And I realize they've only got an hour, but years ago, that's all any of us had was an hour.
I think that might be an advantage these days.
Well, what I was going to say, they've got to slow down a little bit, and they've got to start giving these guys some depth, some personality, some mic time, you know, a couple 5-minute segments throughout the show. So there's more substance to the players, especially with the X Division, with the exception of Daniels, Styles, and well, now on Joe, which I don't see how he fits in the X Division. But anyway, most of these guys are just names.
You know, that's really true, and to me, you take that hour, and of course, you know, syndication, and even before the day, just the local territorial TV, you know, Mid-Atlantic TV had, as well, you know, you did the, you know, you're doing the announcing for it and all that, but I mean, it had, you know, these territories had their 2 hours. They had 1 hour one time and 1 hour on the next thing, and you do your focus towards your main event, and you have the show have a focus. They're not going to have time. I mean, I'm a little concerned about the women being on TNA because I just don't know they have the time in an hour
right. To
have a women's segment as a kind of boutique to the side,
mm-hmm.
and then get over, you know, then do some of the things that you're talking about. I think they know they've got to introduce a lot of, you know, their stars to a new audience. And to do that, they've got to do what you're talking about, video features and interviews and that kind of thing. So they're going to have to be careful about not giving too much. One of the things to me, though, is I think they've got a real opportunity. Instead of doing a replay show on Monday nights, just spend the money and tape another hour, tape and book another hour of television that goes along with the first hour that you did.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think that would help them too. But, you know, you can focus and hit that main event. And, you know, a two-hour wrestling show is really good. But even the best one of those shows, you have those times where it's time to go to the bathroom or get some Fritos or, you know, drink a beer or whatever it is that you do, because it goes on and on and on. It's like watching a movie. And, you know, if you get that hour, you can hit it and go away and leave an impact.
Sure. Yeah. Well, you know, earlier Doc said, well, what do you do to get the people to watch your show? And I think one of the things you do is go back to basics. I don't care which company it is, because we were talking about people think it's a shoot versus, yes, it's a work, but what we still have available to us in the industry is the element of surprise. Instead of telegraphing a switch or an angle 10 weeks out, you know, surprise me.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. The advantage to me to the scripted stuff is that you know, if you've got the discipline, you can really plan it out and then improvise in the middle with those surprises too, and really kind of take that audience on the trip. The disadvantage of the shoot is, you know, instead of just going, I want this guy to end up wrestling this guy in our big money match, you kind of got a plan. Okay, this is what happens if he wins, and this is what happens if he loses too.
Right.
And it may not work exactly the way you want it to do, but they don't do mixed martial arts. The UFC doesn't do it exactly like, you know, it's a tournament like football does. You know, the best NFL does, the best whatever teams, you know, 10 teams end up in the tournament and they end up in the Super Bowl and the best team wins. It still is, okay, what's the most attractive matchup that's going to get people excited, no matter what the guy's, you know, no matter what the guy's winning record. Of course, he's got to have some credibility. But, yeah, I think there's some real advantages to that. And if you pay enough attention to detail, it's like going to the movies. You lose yourself in that world.
Exactly.
And if you lose yourself in that world, then shooting work doesn't matter.
You know, we're talking about basics again, but I think the other thing, my other little problem, I mean, when I say it's a problem, it's just to me it's overdone, is the multiple challenger matches in TNA, 6 men, 8 men.
I agree with that.
It becomes an aerial acrobatic act, and there's no personality to it. There's no story. There's no depth. And I think you got to remember, this is about Bruce Mitchell versus Les Thatcher and personal issues. And you get 8 guys out there, it becomes so totally impersonal.
No, I really do agree with you saying, Les. And I'm hoping that Scott D'Amore and Mike Tenay and the rest of that group, I really understand that's what they're looking to do, is to give those guys more personality, and they do have a more of an understanding of it. But, yeah, I think it's always a political thing when I see that. It's like, we'll let you do your spectacular moves, and we'll let 8 other people do them with you, and in that case, you're mollified, so you're not complaining about you don't have a personality and all that. And I think you've got to have that personality. And also, I think there's a place for the high spot, and I think there's a place to slow it down and all that. You've got to take people on an emotional roller coaster.
Exactly.
And sometimes you get numbed by that. I'm not a huge – there are times when I open my mouth wide, but I'm, you know, going, oh, my God, that's amazing. But I'm not a huge high spot guy at all.
Uh-huh.
Well, we got 2 guys who can fly their asses off in Eddie Guerrero and Rey Mysterio, virtually doing no – flying in one of the hottest programs that's gone on this year.
And that program was personality-based. And it was so strong, the acting was so strong in it. And what I mean by that, you know, and that's part of working to me, too, is the facial expressions and when to do something. I don't know why I'm saying this to you, Les. I apologize. I mean, the nerve that I have for saying this, but anyway. But, you know, the timing and all that. And they had that, they did it so well that you really could get involved in it and overlook the fact that if it was real life, everybody involved in it would have been in the jail,
mm-hmm.
you know, for mistreating that kid. But, you know, you could put that aside and go, okay, Eddie's so good and Ray's so good as the good guy foil to it that you can get into it. And you're right. And they knew when to kick it up and when to bring it back down again. And it's been the best program of the year. And it's not because they're great wrestlers that they are. It's because they told a very, you know, a story that you could bring yourself into, and they paced
yeah,
it out right.
Exactly.
Bruce, we've loved having you. It's been a good segment.
Well,
and
I appreciate that.
We're going to see you again in a few weeks. Bruce Mitchell does an excellent column over at the PW Torch. It's at pwtorch.com.
Exactly, and he's funny except when he's picking on me.
And I
still hold a grudge from you making me the commissioner of your fantasy league.
Oh, God.
I made all them horrible draft picks.
Yeah, that was awful. And of course, I did that on purpose. By the way, Les, when's your book coming out?
Well, I hope to say September the 15th, but I'm told now it's possibly between now and the 1st of October.
I know that you did a lot of hard work on it, but it's too bad you couldn't get any good workers to, like, kind of help you out with it.
I know. Well,
like Harley Race and Rick
Steamer. Harley the Steamer.
Good Lord. Good Lord. It's too bad you couldn't find anybody.
Yeah.
Except two of the best ever. Right. Good grief.
I'll mention you to Jimmy when I talk.
I appreciate that, as I'm sure you know.
Bruce, we'll see you again in a few weeks.
All right, enjoy it, guys.
Thanks for being on the show.
Buddy.
Bye.
All right, guys, it's Bruce Mitchell from The Torch here on Wrestling Weekly. Les, we got to move on and move on fast.
Yes, sir.
We're going to have Nigel McGuinness coming up when we come back here on Wrestling Weekly. It's Doc Young and Les Thatcher. Be back right after this.
We know, you hate this part, but Wrestling Weekly will return after this short break.
Why are you doing this to me?
Doc Young and Les Thatcher back here with you at Wrestling Weekly. A lot of good stuff, as we said, coming up on the show, still to come. It's going to be Harley Race, Buff Bagwell. But right now, we've got the ROH Pure Champion on the line, Nigel McGuinness. Nigel, it's great to have you on Wrestling Weekly this week.
Great to be on, mate. Nice to hear from you all.
You know what, Nigel? The listeners, I need to tell them that when I say this, I mean it jokingly, but I've known Nigel since he was a college student here at Kent State University in Northern Ohio, and when they said he was the Pure Champion, I have a hard time putting Pure in Nigel McGuinness.
I'm a pure idiot.
No. I want to say this, Doc. I'm proud to say I trained this young man, and if anybody deserves, he's going to be on Heat tonight, we think, we hope. He won the ROH Pure title. He's getting looked at by WWE in some dark matches down to OVW. He deserves every minute. This guy, his story should be a book. He was over here as an exchange student when I met him. He went home, finished up his college. He came back. He could only be with us 6 months at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had to go back to England. So his training was spread over 2.5 years, basically. And he ate himself from 175. What do you weigh now, Nige? About 220?
236 I weighed myself at Newark Airport. Yeah.
Wow.
All right. And he's worked his ass off, and there's no other way to say it but that. And I'm so proud to, you know, have just been even a little part of what he's accomplished.
Excellent.
Well, thank you very much, Les. I really appreciate everything you've done for me.
Well, thank you, my friend. You and if somebody doesn't sign you, hell, I will.
Fantastic.
Tell him a little bit about, you came over here as an exchange student, you went to Kent. By the way, he's got a degree in chemistry, so if he decides he doesn't want to wrestle, he'd become a hotty-totty scientist, for Christ's sake. But a little bit about how you first became a wrestling fan and so forth, and how we got hooked up.
I first became a wrestling fan when I saw it on TV in England. I saw the old British style over there with guys like Finlay and Mark Rocco. It was on TV, and that was probably around about mid-80s, and they took it off TV, and the next thing I ever heard about pro wrestling was SummerSlam 89, I think, something like that, at the Hart Foundation. That was what got it back into me when some of my friends started getting the videotapes from America, and my parents got satellite TV, and I was a fan ever since. And, of course, as a kid, like most wrestling fans, they all say, you know, they want to be a wrestler when they grow up, and I guess I never grew out of that dream, or I never grew up, whichever way you want to look at it. And, when was it? I came out to go to school out here and wrote off to all the different wrestling schools around the country, and Les was the only person that actually wrote me back by hand, and I thought, well, if this guy's willing to, you know, take the time to write me back by hand, he's obviously interested, and he's obviously willing to go to great lengths to make sure he trains it properly. So I went down, had a look around the place, and And I was sold, you know, and I had one year left before I graduated, so I went back to England and finished, and that was it, you know. Degree in hand, I came back over here, and pretty much been here on and off ever since.
And what was your degree in?
Chemistry.
Chemistry.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you what, Doc, when he first stepped in that ring of ours.
This was at Heartland, right?
School, his eyes lit up like sparklers. It was just like, oh, my God. And he was just so excited. I'll never forget that. But, honestly, that's in part why he's where he's at, because he has that kind of passion and that kind of drive. And then he got noticed by the wrestling press when we were on the 2020 thing, and he cut, Dave Meltzer said, a better promo than some of the guys who were making six figures a year.
Uh-huh. Excellent. Nigel, I have to ask you, have you heard of the Nigel McGuinness game?
Yeah, little bits here and there. It sounds a bit goofy, but
Jimmy Jacobs told us about it a couple weeks ago when he was on here.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you shouldn't believe everything you hear from Jimmy Jacobs.
They were in the guys in the chat room, our live listeners. They were in there playing the game a little bit earlier, and they.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, they came up with some clever ones.
What was the best one you got so far?
They of course had the one where if Nigel McGuinness is in a bar, he's in it to gin it.
Gin it, good, yeah.
That's Jimmy Jacobs. Mine was when Nigel watches old CBS reruns, he's in it to Dr. Quinnett.
Quinnett, yes.
Yes, excellent. Good stuff. You could play the game all night long.
It's no boggle, but you know, it's not the next Tickle Me Elmo, but you know.
If you get a big contract and become a big star, we'll be seeing that game made put out by Milton Bradley on.
Absolutely, yeah.
Shells, for Christ's sake.
So, how was your experience at Heat? I mean, what was everybody like backstage and stuff?
Everyone was really cool. I know that's just going to sound like me giving lip service to the WWE, but it really wasn't. I've been up there probably three times now just to do tryouts where you roll around in the afternoon and stuff, and from various other people around the business on the indies, etc. I'd heard from a few people that, you know, the people weren't very happy and I didn't really want to be there, etc. And, of course, I didn't see them after the show, and I didn't see them, you know, when they were back at home. But, you know, in all honesty, when I was there, everybody, you know, seemed pleased as punch. I mean, at the end of the day, they've all got good jobs, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
In the business, and there's very few in it. So everyone was really cool, and no one big-leagued me. Everyone was polite and friendly, you know, and I just sort of pretty much kept to myself, but, you know, tried to chat to everybody. And when I was up there on that day for Heat, there was probably, I think, 15 guys from OVW and maybe another 10 guys from the indies who were all there as extra talent. So there was just a ton of guys there, you know what I mean? And there was almost too many guys backstage. We were almost getting in the way of everybody else with catering and everything else, you know. But I had a really good time. I always enjoy it when I go up there. It's just a very professional atmosphere, and it's fun. And, you know, people are doing it for a living rather than just, you know, doing it as a hobby and trying to do it for a living. And it's just a great experience with all those agents up there and, you know, all the wealth of experience that they've got and the various people from all over the world they've got there. It's I had a fantastic time, you know. I really enjoyed it. I can't wait to go back sometime.
Excellent. We're going to take some questions from the chat room. Chris wants to know what it was like working for Paul Heyman at a couple of recent OVW shows.
I've got nothing but good things to say about Paul. I really never met him beforehand, but just since I've been down there, it's just a pleasure to watch him book. You know, we get together at about 11 in the morning to go over the show for that evening, and just to see the way he books. And the best thing about Paul Heyman is, for a guy who's got such a fantastic reputation for being a good booker, and believe me, he is, he has no ego whatsoever. I mean, he will ask for questions from anybody, and no matter who you are, if you've been in the business for 6 minutes, 6 years, or 60 years, and he'll take everybody's advice because, you know, I think he's of the mindset that anybody can contribute something and that you maybe you didn't see yourself, you know, so he's really good about that. And I wasn't there before he was booking the shows, but just since I've been there, it's a fantastic morale just because he gets the best out of people, you know what I mean? I think he's doing a fantastic job. He's booking people on their strengths, and that's really, that's what booking's all about, isn't it? You know what I mean? Getting the most out of people, and it's just been fantastic to be a part of it, just to watch, if nothing else.
absolutely. You're in Ring of Honor now, too, actually, and just won the peer title from Samoa Joe. We had Samoa Joe on the show a couple of weeks ago. What is Joe like? Is he a nice guy?
Backstage, yeah, he's a fantastic guy, you know. He's people, I don't know whether people realize this about him or not, but he's really smart as well. And not smart in the terms of, you know, he can do, like, you know, long addition and stuff like that, but smart in terms of the wrestling business, just to see beyond the, you know, the simple going out there and doing stuff. You know, psychology is a cliche, but just the difference between getting over and not getting over, and being a superstar and not being a superstar. He just, I mean, I came to him with a couple of questions just about my character, my gimmick, et cetera, et cetera, and we only talked for about 20 minutes, but it was just so insightful hearing, you know, what he had to say. He's a real, it's just a credit to the business, to be honest with you, you know.
Yeah, you're right. You know, the few times I've had a chance to sit down and talk with him, I've told people, for his age and actual experience, he's very mature business-wise, or, you know, about our business for a kid his age.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so, absolutely. And, you know, when he's in the ring, he's pretty much what you see, you know.
Mm.
He gets the job done.
Yeah. Cracker wants to know, it says, what does he think of British wrestling turning into an American spot style, where North American indies are turning into more British style?
Explain that in less words.
He's basically saying that British wrestling is starting to turn into what American wrestling was, and vice versa.
You mean like, as in British wrestling in England,
mm-hmm.
per se? I see. Yeah, well, I guess that just gives you an idea of the nature of the business and how things evolve, isn't it, really? That you know, people, you know, the business and any entertainment business largely evolves into something different, i.e. something that people haven't seen. And, of course, in England, generally people haven't seen the American style so much, but much more so in America, people haven't seen the British style, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great for me. You know, it's great for me to be over here and be working a style that a lot of the people seem interested in. But by the same token, it's not that you can just go out there in the British, in the American venue, rather, and just do the British style, because I think it's lost on a lot of Americans, you know what I mean? It is in vogue, and by that I mean the boys on the indies, they like doing a lot of that British style because it's cool. But as far as the actual fans go, and certainly when you're talking about, you know, WWE fans, the people that buy the pay-per-views and buy the T-shirts, they really haven't been educated to understand the British style as needs to be to really get it over, you know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
I mean, if you watch Regal can, you know, out British style me, you know, 100 times to 1. But he doesn't do it because with the people that he's working with, and more so with the people who are watching the product, the style that he works gets over more. And that is the key to the business, whether it's in England or in America or wherever it happens to be, is getting over, however you do it.
Crusher Cox wants to know, who, if anybody, has been the most influential person in your career?
Man, I don't think I can obviously pick one person. Obviously, starting out with Les is going to be the first person that really, you know, built my love and, to a certain extent, my sense of professionalism within the business, you know, and the respect for the business. That was, you know, something that Les always instilled in all of us. And then when I went back to England, there was a guy, Chick Cullen, who was one of Finlay's sort of running buddies who he worked with a lot, who actually got in the ring and showed me a lot of stuff. He was a tremendous influence on me just because he was a British legend himself. And then since then, man, that's
Steamboat.
Steamboat, yeah, to a certain extent, absolutely. I watched a lot of his stuff on tapes, and you know, a lot of the other British veterans as well that I've managed to get tapes of, you know, they've obviously been an influence. But in terms of actually meeting them in person, you know, I haven't really had that as strong a connection, you know, there.
Do you intend to come back to the UK a lot in the future, or are you pretty much settled here in the US?
In terms of living or in terms of wrestling?
In terms of wrestling.
I'd love to go back. I mean, I say intend. I can only intend so much if someone's not willing to pay me. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, if people book me, I'd love to go back to England. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, most of my friends are over there, my family. the thing with being over here and trying to pursue wrestling in America is I hardly ever get to see them. I call my parents once a week, but that's obviously different than actually seeing them. I've probably seen them maybe three or four times in the last 3 or 4 years. You know, that's not a lot for, you know.
Are you still going to be doing any IWA Mid-South shows?
No, I haven't worked for IWA for a year or so. I haven't talked to Ian since then either, really. It's not that there's any heat or anything else like that, but, you know, I just have the money. I was never really, you know, getting rich working there, and I think the thing with Ian's place is it's a chance for a lot of younger guys who haven't had, you know, the experience to get on tapes that go all over the world, because a lot of his product goes to Germany and various other places around Europe. It's a chance for them to go out there and, you know, perform and get at least a little bit of internet pub for themselves, if nothing else, you know, as long as they don't kill themselves in the ring.
Right.
But, yeah, no, I've no big plans for me to go back down there you know, I'm pretty much settled with the direction I'm going in at the moment.
Chris V says that your matches with Colt Cabana were entertaining on all fronts, and he wants to know if you enjoyed working with Colt.
Yeah, loved it. Absolutely loved it. I've always loved watching Cabana wrestle ever since I first saw him. You know, he's him and Spider Nate Webb are two of my favorite guys in the wrestling business to watch, because they're just so entertaining. So when I got the chance to work a feud with Cabana, yeah, no, it was a lot of fun. And when you have that sort of respect for someone that I have for Cabana, it's nice to be able to go out there and have those sort of matches as well, because that sort of, you know, that exemplifies that respect that you have for that guy when you can go out there and work together and stuff like that. And I like to think we had some good matches, you know. I mean, we tried some different things. It wasn't just a simple case of an old school feud. We had the European style match in New York that, you know, kind of got over like a fart in church. And then we had, you know, the one that started out in Dayton that people seemed to love. And then we had the Soccer Riot match just to end things off that was just, you know, really, really entertaining and a lot of fun. It was good.
Have you ever worked against Nate Webb?
Yes, once or twice. I can't say enough good about Nate Webb. You know, as a wrestler, but more so as a human being, he's just, you know, someone I love being around in and out of the ring.
I've never seen him work. I've heard a lot about him.
Oh, he's excellent. I've seen him in person, and he's very entertaining. I see a future for him. He's still a kid, but
he's still fairly young, but he looks younger than he actually is, of course, as well, you know. And it's awkward because this business is still very body orientated. You know what I mean?
Right.
American fans, at least mainstream American fans, are educated to think that pro wrestlers should look like bodybuilders, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's not obviously always the case.
Mm.
And Nate doesn't look like a bodybuilder, you know, by the longest shot.
Right.
but he's absolutely, you know, he's very entertaining, and I'm a great believer that everybody has their spot on the show, you know what I mean?
Do you,
you know, excuse me, Doc.
Go ahead.
Like working for Gabe and Ring of Honor, that's, I mean, Doc had asked about the Cabana matches. I never got to see any of them, but I read the reviews on them, and I, knowing you and your sense of humor and knowing Colton is, I could picture them, you know.
Yeah.
But
now you've
turned 180 degrees as a pure champion, but that's, I think, the unique thing about Ring of Honor. There is, you can work both ways there. It just depends who you're working with.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, depending on which town you're in for Ring of Honor as well, but some of the towns are so hot and they're such great wrestling towns, and that you can do that. Like, exactly like you say, you can try a different style that maybe wouldn't get over with another, you know, set of fans, and people will give you the chance, you know what I mean? That's one of the best things about it, like you say.
Do you have any interest in working for TNA?
I mean, yes, you know, they pay money, and I like making money.
Right.
So, you know, I'd be a fool to say no. I think they got some absolutely fantastic guys down there. I just don't know whether my style would really fit in there. I mean, obviously, with the right push and the right angle, then, yeah, of course, it would fit in there great. But, you know, TNA, I'm not sure. You know, Total Nonstop Action isn't really my style. Total Nonstop Wrist Locks might be closer. You know what I mean? I don't see that selling pay-per-views, unfortunately.
Crusher in the chat room, and he says, in 10 words or less, how would you describe Les Thatcher the person?
It's all right, go ahead. I
cannot fit Les Thatcher in 10 words.
Yeah. I heard he's a hard ass.
that would be an extreme disservice to Les.
SOB, that's only three words.
Oh, Les, you're so down on yourself.
No.
Well, Nigel, we've had a great time with you. And we thank you for coming on the show. It's been a really good interview.
No problems at all. I appreciate it, guys, and I wish you all the best with it.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
And I'm getting ready to turn heat on to see if you're on there.
All right.
Yes,
well, you know.
I've got that recording.
Don't record it, you know.
And my friend, God bless you, and I just hope the best for you. Good luck.
All right. Thanks ever so much, Les. I do appreciate it. Say hello to Alice for me, okay?
All right, my friend.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, all the best. Bye-bye.
We've got Harley Race coming up, Buff Bagwell, lots of good stuff on the way. Nigel's a good guy, Les.
Yeah, he sure is. No, so, you know, and when I say it, honestly, he's worked his butt off, man. He you know, whatever he gets, he deserves. He's worked for him. He really has.
Uh-huh. Only the best wishes for Nigel.
Yes.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got Harley Race, the King, right here on Wrestling Weekly.
It's Wrestling Weekly Radio, broadcasting greatness every Sunday.
Woo! What a night!
Doc Young and Les Thatcher here with you at Wrestling Weekly. Got Buff Bagwell still to come in the show, but right now we've got the King himself, Harley Race, on the show. Harley, it's been it's great to have you here on Wrestling Weekly.
Well, thank you, Doc, and you too, Les.
Good, Harley. Go ahead.
You know, I don't like going on in front of people. I always liked the tail end of it. Then I got to come back to it.
I want to ask you about. You were at the Legends deal in Charlotte last month, and then the one in Pennsylvania just a couple weekends ago. And both, as I understand it, were better organized than in previous ones and better attended. So maybe these things are picking up steam.
I think they are, Les, and I think what they need to do is cut down on the numbers that they're trying to push into all these things, and give the guys that are going into them, you know, you can't talk about wrestling in a 30-minute segment, you know, especially if you got 100 people asking you questions.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, the one that you and I were at the last time, it was that way, Les. I mean, there was so darn many people there that. They couldn't make any money because of all the people they were paying.
Right.
And the people wasn't satisfied with what they got because they didn't get asked people that they wanted to ask a few things. So I think if they back off of 10 jillion names and run it like these last two were run, I think they will catch on.
Mm-hmm. I think they are starting to do that.
Yeah, you're doing, you were saying what, over the next couple months, what, three or four more?
Yeah. I'm going up to Chicago for a golf thing. I'll be there Thursday through Saturday this coming week. And then, of course, we've got our camp the following week. And then I think between now and the first year, I must have five more of them.
Great.
Wow.
Very good. And the main thing I want to talk about, and I've been talking about it here on the show for the last few weeks, is the 21st to the 24th of this month will be actually the second NOAA training and trial camp in Eldon at your place. And for those who don't know, Elda, Missouri is right on Lake of the Ozarks, right smack in the middle of the state of Missouri, and it's a great time of the year down there, good weather. Anyway, this year it's what Marufuji, Kobashi, and Kenta are coming over to help with the training all 4 days.
Yes. And then the big guy, Kobayashi, I've got him booked also for Ring of Honor in New York City and Philadelphia just after it.
Good.
So the big guy is making his debut in America with us here. And then he's got two more shots. So he's making a pretty good debut in America.
Oh yeah.
Good. And from the camp, there are going to be two athletes picked by the folks from NOAA, and those two guys will get the opportunity to travel to Japan and live and train in NOAA Dojo for 3 months, right?
Yes.
All expenses paid.
Everything paid, except, right? You know what they want to spend on their own over there. So last year, it's a great thing for the guys. I think I'm going to be a little bit more involved in the picking of the people this year than I was last year.
Mm-hmm.
When they're paying the bills and stuff, you kind of want to let them do whatever they want to do. But you want to make sure that you give them enough input on it where they're going to be happy with the outcome.
Right. The thing that I said too, Harley, and we've talked about here, and Doc and I have talked about a couple of times here on the show, mm-hmm. is that Ken from NOAA was saying last year that they're looking for good young American athletes for long-term relationships. And these, if a guy hooks up over there and everything works out right, he's going to be seeing what? Any place from 4 to 6 tours a year. And once he works his way up the chain, he's going to make a good living and doesn't necessarily have to sign with some big company in our country.
Yeah, that's true. And for a good long time.
Right.
There's been guys, well, look at Stan Hansen. Stan Hansen didn't work 3 places in America, and he made probably $500,000 a year for 25 years.
Exactly. And that's over there, wrestlers are treated like major athletes too.
Yes, they are.
I mean, that's so big in that country.
Uh huh.
But the other thing these kids should know too, that they need to be in shape and they need to be ready to bust their butts.
Yes, Japanese are super big into stretching, and. In all sincerity, stretching is one of the things that will allow any athlete in any profession to stay in whatever his chosen profession is for a lot of years. For a while here in America, it got to be the biggest and the most blown up and the tightest looking. And then they figured out that these guys are getting hurt every other day, and they're still having to pay him these horrendous figures, that they're even backing off of it some.
So that's pretty much the way that you train is going to help them, overcome some of the stuff and last.
Well, as Les can tell you, he's been more into the workout end than I have been through my whole career, but when you stay... where when you get hit, your muscle's got enough elasticity in it that it's not going to tear. Your survival rate in any profession is a hell of a lot longer.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And the more limber Doc, your body, if you're lifting in this day and age, you got to be. There were, during our time, there were some guys who could get by it, and weren't in any tremendous amount of shape. But the way the style is today, These kids have got to be in shape, and if you're in shape, your body responds better, it recovers better, and the stretching is just as important as the lifting or the acrobatics so you're athletic and supple. That way, your body absorbs it a little bit easier.
Mm-hmm. Harley, how can people sign up for your camp?
Well, they can go to harleyrace.com. We're getting real close to the cutoff date. If they get a hold of us ASAP, we can still get them in. I think we're at like 35 right now. And we only count the ones that, you know, put the deposit down. So
mm-hmm.
If they get off their rears and get on it real quick, they can probably still get there.
That's excellent. Are you ready for some questions from the chat room?
Sure.
Okay. Crusher wants to know if you've thought about doing a follow-up to your autobiography since it's been so well received.
I've said no, and then, you think about it, you say, well, why not? All I know is if I do, it'll be with a different company.
Okay.
Can I mention while we're talking about books here that
sure.
Our training manual should be out somewhere between the middle of this month and the middle of next month. And that's the Wrestler's Instructional and Training Guide, and it's me and Harley and Steamboat's book with Alex Marvez doing the text. But anyway, we'll know more about that, we hope, next mm-hmm. week. Yes.
Chris wants to know if you intend to hold similar camps in the future with different promotions.
I'm sure we will. Les has been setting majority of that up. But here lately, for some reason or another, I've been inundated with people on personal appearances and stuff. We'll just cross each bridge as we get to them.
Yes, if you would like to book us for camps, go to EPWT.com.
Excellent, yeah.
And we'll send you the information. Let us know.
Mm-hmm. Cox wants to know if you still collect firearms.
Yes, I do.
He wants to know how large your collection is.
Excuse me, fellas.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a real big collection now. I still have probably 20 long guns and about that many handguns. It's just something that I was in for a lot of years. And as you become less mobile, if you can't use those things and go out and play with them, you kind of get bored of with them.
Yeah.
Let me mention something. Harley can tell you about it.
Sure.
He has got a violin that is an antique. It's how old is the violin, Harley?
It's 300 plus.
Wow.
And it was originally from the Race family out of northwestern part of England.
That's excellent. How much would something like that be worth?
Have no idea.
Don't care, do you?
No. One of these days I'm going to pass it on to my son. It's always been in the race-related family.
Mm-hmm.
It got in. The guy that gave it back to me was my cousin, and he was 84, 85 when he gave it back to me, and his name was Black. His last name was Black.
Mm-hmm.
And you were there, Les, when I got it back?
Yeah, sure.
And that was my dad's sister's son. And it had been in the Black family for almost 80 years and then was put back into the Race family where it originated from.
L.W. Swank wants to know, is it ever too late to start a career in wrestling?
Oh, it's hard to say on that one. Tiny Mills started when he was 42 years old and wrestled for 20-plus years and did great.
Mm-hmm.
But that's one in a million.
Yeah, and another, Rico, who just got out of the business again, but he was 38 when he started training.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know he was that old.
Oh, yes. I didn't either. When I first saw him in OVW, Cornette said, how old do you think he is? I said, about 28. Nope. He said, add 10 to that. I said, oh, nonsense.
Wow.
But, yeah. Yeah, he was 38. But more times than not, the younger the better. Well, not the younger the better. If you're 17, 18, and it's, you know, and from that point on, it gets a little less likely you're going to make it.
Mm-hmm. You know, in recent weeks, Arlie, we've been talking about the old territory system. Do you feel that the territory system will be able to reemerge in the wrestling business today?
Never say never, but it's going to have to. The McMahon dynasty is going to have to slip, stumble, or fall, or somewhere along the lines of. And I don't see that happening anytime soon.
No.
Mm-hmm.
The reason the dynasty fell is, I shouldn't say dynasty, I should say the ring of people that were there. Was there were all around my age now when all this started to happen. And I'm 62. And they weren't going to invest their money that they had into a fight that they thought they might lose. I think all of them together thought that they could win it, but there just wasn't enough confidence to risk their life savings to fight it, so they stepped aside, and there wasn't enough of people that were my age when that happened. And Les's age, that had enough invested in the business to really step forward and say, no, it isn't going to happen. I lost $500,000 cash the day it happened. But there just wasn't enough of us around to kick it forward.
Right. Crusher has a question. He wants to know what would be the one thing you could change, if anything, in regards to your long and distinguished career?
Oh, I think I'd have left out a few of those stupid bumps that I come up with. That I could have probably went a lot further without them. But there isn't a heck of a lot about my life or career that I would really change. Mm-hmm. A whole lot.
Has WWE ever contacted you about a Legends contract?
Well, with the Legend all just came out, and the next one that'll be coming out will be Heenan, Bundy, and myself. And then, of course, along the way, they forgot that my name was incorporated and they didn't have control of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, after the next one comes out, the Bundy and the Heenan race, then Jax Dolls is putting out one of Harley Race with the NWA title.
Oh, that's excellent.
Great. Very good.
Have you got to see it yet?
Yes.
What do you think?
It's a great, great resemblance. They may have me a little bit too muscled up, but that's not a bad thing.
You got dark hair or blonde hair in that one?
It's got the blonde hair, and it's also got each tattoo. When I first saw it, I said, well, that's the first mistake. And the other real nice thing is about it, it's the two prototypes that it was made off of. They shipped to me because at the two-year mark, they destroy, or they were going to destroy it, and they sent it to me. So.
Mm-hmm.
Which will mean that it'll become a collector's item real soon.
Excellent, excellent. Ooh, here's a good question to end on. You wrestled Ric Flair on several spot shows in the mid-90s, but do you still have any desire to step back in the ring on a one-time basis?
None whatsoever.
No.
The desire is there, mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. If I could jump back in there and do it on a weekly basis, or whatever. The desire to do it is there. My body is just at the point where it would not support me in a fashion that I could do it without humiliating myself, and I ain't going to do that.
Right. Well, Harley, we've enjoyed having you on. Guys, don't forget, it's his training camp. It's the 21st through the 24th. That's right, Les?
Right, exactly. And you can check it out at harleyrace.com. You can sign up there as well.
Excellent. Harley, it's been great having you on the show.
Harley, give BJ a hug for me, and I'll give you a call next week.
All right, Les.
All right, buddy.
Again, it's always a pleasure talking to you guys.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, that's Harley Race here on Wrestling Weekly. A lot of good stuff still to come in the show, and less an update from the chat room, guys. Nigel McGuinness is on Heat right now.
Is he on Heat right
yes,
now?
He's on right now, taking on Basham.
All right.
And I guess Basham has a goth gimmick.
Oh, my God.
That's what they're saying, so
that,
I don't know.
Well, Damage is the name that that Danny used in OVW.
Mm-hmm.
They made him Danny Basham when he and Doug came up.
Right.
So.
I don't know. I'm gonna have to check it out. I got a recording right now. So
cool.
After the show, I'm gonna check it out the match. So that's good for Nigel, and I'm really happy that he got on the show.
Yes, and he said he didn't get much in, but what I'm seeing is, he's doing what he was, what he was brought in to do.
Right. Exactly.
And but he's doing it well, by golly.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Cool.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we've got Buff Bagwell on the show, The Stuff, right after this on Wrestling Weekly.
You're listening to WrestlingWeekly.com. We always have the scoop on the inside of professional wrestling.
Don't listen to me, people. You can find out for yourself right now at home.
Doc Young, Les Thatcher, back with you at Wrestling Weekly. Jamming to the music. We've got on the line right now our featured guest. He's here this week, guys. It's Buff the Stuff Bagwell.
That was below the bell. I want to go on record saying that I made the call back to Doc and said, bro, and anybody that knows my career, heat or not heat, people that really know me know that I just don't do those kind of things. I always show, always come through, and I was like, oh my God, man, no way. So I called Doc, let it go on record. I called him, apologized, and said, bro, let's do it again this Sunday.
Yep.
So I apologize, and Buff is here.
And here we are.
I just figured that Buff got tied up with some hot looking chicks.
He was actually a really cute guy. Some guy named Les Thatcher. I don't know what the deal is.
So what have you been up to, Buff?
Dude, believe it or not, man, I stay absolutely swamped, and I'm glad for it. It's just it's just hard out there, It's I got some personal trouble a while back during the that's been, I'm sure it's, I've been drilled. I can't turn my first order's gonna go on record by saying I can't turn my computer on. But
okay.
I talk to my web guy a lot, so I've never in my life, I swear to God, in 15 years, I've never opened ever in my life a dirt sheet, piece of paper to read, any kind of dirt sheet. I've never turned on a wrestling interview on websites. For 2 years, I got dogged out on the internet for several things toward at the end of the career of my career, and at the end of, let me say, the end of WCW's career.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess every ammunition I can hold against my agent, my mom, my brother, my family, my friends, my fans, I wasn't going to answer all the internet rumors. And God, I still wish I wouldn't have. I mean, I got drilled doing it. I told y'all not to do this. We built it up and had a big thing where it was people could call in. And it's the same deal with internet. You're not going to get your point across. And so I just refuse to listen to any of it or tune it in, or there's just so many lies on it. But these people really take this stuff just biblically. I mean, they believe when they hear it on the internet, it's true.
Right.
You know, so I try to dodge all that. But, you know, I've been staying busy, man. I do it myself. And when I had that personal trouble, back to that, I took a whole month of June off. And I thought, you know, I'm done. I'm done. I'm going to move on, do something else, and just it's the first time in my life I got excited about being done. And then my phone just started ringing with all kind of new promoters and bookers. And you know, then I realized that, you know, I don't want to clock in. I mean, I'm just going to call it like it is. I don't. A lot of people would probably rather clock in than do my schedule. I mean, to look like I look, to eat like I eat, to travel like I travel, it's, you know, it's probably harder than clocking in, but I just don't work good behind a desk. I ain't going to, never had to. I don't want a boss. I am my own boss. Even when I wrestled making $1 million a year for Turner, Turner signed my checks, but I met him once in 12 years. So I never had a boss. We did our job. We did what we were supposed to do, and you didn't have to answer to nobody. Mm-hmm. And that's a plus in the wrestling business if you do your job. And now I do it even more, and I'm even more my boss. I mean, I was in 15 cities last month. I got 12 cities this month, and Scotty Steiner's coming back.
Really?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, his first show. I called him. I'm trying to, all the time I'm talking, I'm trying to find my calendar. But
he had an operation for the drop foot, didn't he?
Say again?
He had the surgery to repair the, what they call it, drop foot? Or
yeah, exactly. He had, you know, he had to deal with his back, and and he had the same surgery as McNair had, with the same doctor, actually, out in UCLA. But you got to realize, you know, McNair gets sacked on a bad game three times a game, and, you know, you're going to fall 15 times a match in a wrestling match. So it's two totally different aspects, wrestling being entertainment or whatever you're talking about, you know, falling and injuries and et cetera. But, yeah, I called him up for a buddy of mine to do an Asheville show, and he said, yeah, I couldn't believe it. And I said, wow. So then word of mouth got out that he wanted to start working, people got word of mouth that he was working, and they started calling me. And I called Scotty up, and I said, look, bro, I know, I don't know exactly where you're at, but I'm going to ask you the same thing I asked Sting, Luger, everybody that, you know, that I've been friends with. Do you want to wrestle? So I can tell the guy, the promoters, either yes, he wants to do it, no, he wants to do it, what's your price? And we talked about an hour, and he came over to the house, actually. I ain't seen him in 3 years, and we talked for about 2 hours. And I said, dude, there's a lot of money can be made, and what do you want to do? He goes, I want to do it. I said, let's do it. And I said, okay, so we came up with a figure and of what we thought was fair and people would work him as, and we're going to do a thing where we go around and do like a little thing all over. I'm wrestling him in on the 17th in Clinton, North Carolina, mm-hmm. and then on the 24th we're in Concord with him and Scotty and Rick, and then it's me, Rick, and Scotty again up in New Jersey on the 30th. So, you know, that's going to bring new light to, I think, a lot of things. I mean, Scotty Steiner back on Independence, you know, that's huge. And not back on first time.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a little excited about it. It brings new life to me, I think, too, because us tagging again and stuff. I mean, you know, there's not many guys that can make a career out of Independence. And I've been lucky enough to be one of those. This is my only job, and I still pay the bills. And it's rough sometimes, and it gets hard sometimes, but, you know, it's been 5 years, and I've still been doing it. So I'm just going to keep doing it until I can't no more, you know.
Mm-hmm. Are you preferring doing the indies now?
Yeah, and that's all I'm doing now is just indies. I don't go to Japan no more. I don't. The money's not worth it. Even Rick, me and Rick were talking the other day, and, you know, and it's just not worth it no more to really. Used to it was so worth going overseas, like Japan and stuff, and now it's just not, you know. I mean, these guys that want to go, and, you know, and pack the tuna and rice in their bag, and God bless them, you know, God bless them, bro. I've been there. I started in skating rinks, and I'm back in them. But you know, I've also been on top. I was also on top for 12 years. But you know, I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't pack my bag. I can't sit and coach for 12 hours, 14 hours, 23 hours to Australia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just can't do it no more. I can't do it. It's not worth the money to you know, leave your wife or kids, whatever your, you know, what your deal is at home. And I just do that. I mean, I just do indies, strictly indies, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned 12 years on top, and then you're talking about 15 years of business. You actually didn't have to spend a lot of time in the indies when you first started.
I didn't. When I first came in, but I spent more than people actually remembered. And let me get the dates and times right on all that. I signed with WCW in September of 90. So, and they went out of business June of 2001. That's when the last time I wrestled for them was that month, and now I went to WWF. So, and that was WWF at the time when I went to them. So, so whatever that is, you know, 11 years, so 10 and a half. But that's the fact. So I was in the Indies. I went with Joe Pedicino as my name was Fabulous Fabian, and that's what he named me. And I was with him for about 8 months. And then that Global Wrestling Federation opened up, and I was the handsome stranger out there for about six, right. about a year and a half, and then Dusty, I was the handsome stranger on Global. Bill Eadie called me up and said, we're shutting down, got nothing to do with nobody, we're quitting, da-da-da-da. And I was sitting there, hold on a second.
Buff Bagwell live here on Wrestling Weekly. Five things do happen.
My dogs don't know that it's a live radio spot, so I'm going to have to put you on hold and yell at them again.
Sure.
But Eadie called up and said, hey, nothing to do. And then I swear to God, and me and Magnum talked about it last night, me and Magnum TA, my phone rang, it's honest to God's truth, and talking about the Indies. You guys got to hold on.
Shut up!
I'm back. But talking about not being around it much was, but my phone rang, and I'm like, what am I going to do, you know? And Magnum goes, hey, this is Magnum CA. And I go, who? He says, it's Magnum. And I said, who's Magnum? I didn't know who it was. And he said, this is Magnum TA with WCW. I said, oh man, I'm sorry, Magnum TA, yeah, I've seen you on TV, and da, da, da. So anyway, so that's how great I was to the business, even though I was wrestling Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert and those kind of guys out in Global, and, but had the experience and all that, was ready to go. But, you know, really, theoretically, as far as the business, because I didn't know nobody. So he goes, well, Dusty wants to meet you and bring you down. And so I went down, and Dusty hired me because I had pretty teeth. He said, you got pretty teeth. I'm going to hire you. And I said, well, okay, cool, man. Let's do it. So Dusty Rhodes actually hired me and came in and, you know, stayed with him for, you know, for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you were there for a long time. I didn't.
It's the second longest.
Yeah.
Me and Sting, you know, because we never jumped back and forth, and it was like I dodged every bullet there was to dodge in this business, and then I got hit by every one of them.
Right.
I got hit by every one of them, you know. It was like, you know, I mean, I survived as Marcus Alexander Bagwell through Dusty and Flair and Sullivan. But then I got a little stroke when I turned to Buff, and then I had to survive Watts, and then Bischoff. Bischoff hated my freaking guts, bro.
Really?
Hated me. And then, but everybody else liked me, and they were like, man, Bagwell's pretty cool, you know. And then he was like, well, you ride a Harley? I said, yeah, I ride a Harley, you know. Well, basically what happened is they found out that the little young kid they thought was some kind of young punk kid in the corner was actually probably the craziest cat in the locker room. And when the boys found out that, they all accepted me and took me in. But first, it was just a 21-year-old punk kid that was trying to be a wrestler. You know, that was an ex-stripper.
Right.
You know, and all of a sudden, I was, you know, a kid that, you know, I'd been in jail more than half the locker room, and that was cool for wrestlers. You know, they were like, they accepted me because of that, because I wasn't no punk.
Uh huh. Somebody told me to ask you about your match last night with Ricky Morton in North Carolina.
Yeah.
Well, how'd that go?
It was a typical, you know, Ricky Morton match. It was real good. I don't think I've ever wrestled Ricky. We talked about that last night. I was like, have we ever wrestled? And he said, I don't think we have. And I said, now we've done tags and stuff, but I don't think we've actually one-on-one ever wrestled. And he said, what do you want to do? And I said, well, what do you want to do? You know, when you wrestle Ricky Morton, you ask him. And I go, what do you want to do? And he goes, let's let the people pick. And I said, all right. So we went out with two different ideas, and the people, it was iffy. It was a little iffy, but the people accepted him more. So I turned heel, and we worked the match as me heel and him baby.
Cool.
All right.
But it was good. It was a good match. I like being. I'm a much better heel. I really am. But in the independents, you don't make no money being a heel because I can't sell my stuff and you know, meet the fans. And it's to me, it's a lot easier being a heel in front of 20 million viewers on a camera than to be a heel in front of, you know, 4, 5, 3, 2, 100 people in a gymnasium, man. You know, it's a little rough when you're talking. I mean, you look in the front row and say, shut up, fat guy, and there's 100 people there that are fat or whatever. It's not, it's quite, it takes, it takes the funny kind of out of it and makes it a little more serious. And I'm not that kind of guy. I'm a kind of a funny heel.
It gets a little personal.
It gets a little personal, you know. And I was telling a little fat kid, I started to shut up, and I was like, oh, my God, you know, it's just, I just don't like doing that. But when you're talking to the camera, it was okay.
Right.
You know, but now you're talking to, you know, a real small crowd in the gym, and it's like, it becomes very personal.
Was that Shelby you were in last night?
That was Shelby, yeah.
Yeah. That's, but it's an easy town to work, right?
Incredible, yeah. The fans are real good there. I've never been there. I've been around that a bunch, but never actually in Shelby. But I never worked for Tony either. Tony, we talked about him earlier. He's what a nice guy he is, and he called me last minute. And I don't have a Saturday open for 3 months, or Friday or Saturday for 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
And he called me on Tuesday. It was actually, he called me Monday. And I said, well, I never heard his name or anything, so I said, well, I'll just call him back, you know. Can't be for this Saturday because I'm usually booked. But I had a cancellation just 2 days before Monday on Saturday. I had a cancellation for the following weekend, which is this week, past weekend. And he said, do you want to wrestle up and for me this Saturday? I was like, you going to not advertise me, have me up there? And Barry Windham didn't no-showed him.
Mm. Oh, really?
So he called me or didn't want to answer his phone or something. So he brought me in to help out the, you know, situation, but he couldn't really, it's really not helping out because he couldn't advertise me. So, but what a nice guy, and he's got a good little thing going up there.
You're
going
to be in Tulsa, Oklahoma, October the 15th.
Yeah, it's a double shot out there for it's a Christian group.
Yeah, Christian wrestling.
Yeah, the guy heard me on radio telling my story about my walk and stuff, and the guy's real cool guy, real nice guy named Brad.
Yeah.
And out in Tulsa, the 14th and 15th out there.
Yeah, cool. AJ Styles on Dr. Tom's going to be there. I'm going to be there. Terry Taylor.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that's a great card then.
Yeah, we'll have a good time. They've got, gosh, I'm trying to think who all's out there. Yeah, Matt Sydal, Petey Williams from TNA.
Oh, well, good.
Yeah, so
yeah, they got a stacked card for that show.
Yeah, well, good.
Yeah, we'll have a good time.
That'll
be
fantastic.
Brad is a good guy, and that's, it ought to be a good little show, too.
Yeah, me and AJ, we hit it off in Hawaii. That kid may be the best wrestler there is.
Really?
Yeah,
I'm not kidding you, dude. I was mesmerized by the kid. And, we was out in Hawaii, and, you know, everywhere we went, it was, you know, Buff, hey, Buff, hey, Buff, and nobody ever said his name or anything. And, God, those kind of days used to be cool. Those kind of days now, I'm scared because I get heat for it. You know, somehow to get back that I did something wrong or something. So I'm like petrified when people don't notice me. I'm like, hey, this is Craig Satter. Here's AJ. Here's, you know, try to get everybody to recognize so it's not like Bagel's trying to steal the limelight or whatever. And about the third day, AJ goes, you know, nobody recognizes me. Why? I said, dude, I was on TV for a lot longer than you. I said, and on the highest rated cable television show for 5 years. I said, that's a hell of a run, bud. I said, you know, and he goes, nobody even pauses. They know it's you. And I said, well, bro, I said, that's just luck. I said, that's the luck of me being on TV. I mean, look at Goldberg. Talk about luck. My God.
Yeah.
The guy's on TV at just the right time, just the right look. You know, timing in life is everything, and you guys know that. I mean,
sure.
There's 30 guys behind Chipper Jones that are just as good, if not better, than him. But until you get the time to prove that and then deliver at that time, you're never going to have that chance. And there's guys that are retired behind Chipper Jones.
Yeah.
Right.
That nobody ever knows. And that's just the way it is. That's just life. So timing's everything. And but what a nice super kid, man. And I'm talking about every night just worked his butt off over the top. I mean, just I couldn't believe it. I mean, and not your typical, you know, do 100 moves and beat you with a, you know, small package kind of deal like a lot of those guys do. I mean, he made sense out of it. His psychology was good, and just everything. I'm a big AJ Styles fan now. I mean, he's just a great kid, and what a hell of a worker.
Yeah, he is a good hand. You're right, absolutely. Yeah. And now you talk about a story. Here's AJ background difference. You're an ex male stripper, and he's an ex male cheerleader.
Yeah, isn't that great? And I mean, he's actually, and that's what he did for like, you know, he was like a cheerleader in school, right?
Yeah.
They should put us together and call us the Fags.
That was that's where he learned to do all the flips and flops initially.
Oh, I mean, he's just he's built like a brick house too, man. And just, you know, he just goes in every match. He reminds me of Benoit a lot, but not with the intensity in the ring with the intensity. But if anybody ever saw Benoit get ready for a match, it was just like unbelievable. I mean,
yeah.
It's like biting nails in half. And I've only seen two guys get ready for a match like that. It was Kurt Angle and Benoit. And just every night the same routine of just going off before they went out to go off, you know?
Right.
And AJ's kind of like that too. Your stretch, you get a full sweat up before he goes out and works. But every night the same thing, everybody else is laid back waiting for their match. And, you know, AJ's over there getting warmed up and intensively warmed up like a mat wrestler, you know,
mm-hmm.
which he was.
You're keeping busy with the indies and everything, but if somebody can, one of the larger companies, and of course there's a couple more starting up too. Well, you were supposed, weren't you booked on that Gladiator thing in San Juan that they canceled out at the last?
Yeah, I was on it. I went down there. I actually went down there, and I was one of the few guys that got paid. My check went through, the money guy in there, his name's Nick, and he actually called me 2 days ago. I called him after it was over to find out what happened and all that. Because me and Jimmy Hart, I mean, the guy, it wasn't no fluke. It was the guy spent like $200,000, man.
Right.
I mean, you know, and was really trying to put a show on. And I'm really not sure what happened, except I was there and saw everything. And it was organized, and we were on TV, and it was really a really big deal. I mean, Jake the Snake was there, and I was there, and Sting was already on the card, and Mero, and Johnny Bad, and Kimberly, and Test, and Jimmy. I mean, it's just a really big card, and the guy spent a lot of money and tried to make it work, and it just kind of fell through. But yeah, I'd love to go back to a big company and would do it. But you know, like WWE, just I don't know, man. I can't do no more. I've done with them, talked to them several times, and these are the kind of things that never get on the internet. That it's always things that would help me that don't get on air. For some reason. But one time probably 3 months ago, a buddy of mine calls me up and goes, "Hey, man, let's go to SmackDown." And I said, "What?" He said, let's go with my family. This guy's about a half mark, half knows the business, but half mark. And he said, "Let's go sit in the audience at SmackDown." I said, "You've lost your damn mind." I said, I can't do that, bro, you know. And so I hung the phone up, and about 2 minutes go by, and I went, "Wait a minute." I kind of like that. I said, and understand, you're talking to Mark Bagwell now. I'm Mark Bagwell on the phone, but that's a perfect move for Buff.
Mm-hmm.
It was perfect. I called him back, and I said, "Oh, my God, this is perfect. I love it. Let's do it." So the guy buys tickets, four seats down at SmackDown at the Bilo Center and Greenville there. And I go to the show, and now for about 10 minutes out from the building, I think, wow, what if this may backfire in my face?
Uh-huh.
What if nobody knows me or says anything or anything? Well, I walk in the door, and it was just a madhouse, just autographs and pictures and all that. Well, I go sit in my seat, and the guys that are with me, I'm having to tell them, quit selling it. You know, just act normal and walk normal, and let's just go to our seats, sit down. So we get to our seat to sit down, and it causes a madhouse in there, too. I mean, there's a line up the damn thing, and I'm signing autographs and taking pictures, and I'm thinking, there's no way a company like Vince is going to sell this.
Right.
There's no way they're going to sell the fact that I'm there. And it got so out of hand that they sold it. Johnny Ace came walking out. And I thought, I said, I never thought they'd sell this. I can't believe it. But it got so bad, nobody was watching the show. It got to where people that didn't know me was wondering who I was.
Right.
You know, and the other people that did know me were getting autographs and signing things. But there's the show's going on, and nobody's watching it. And if I had to do it over, I'd have done that at Raw. So it was live.
Right.
But it was the same show, so I never got on TV or anything. It wasn't no big deal. So, and that's what I was trying to do anyway. You know, I was just really going to go see what would happen. I was kind of curious. And how else better to show whether you got it or not by going to the person's company at the show they're running.
Right.
You know, either you're going to fall on your face or you're going to show them that you still got what it takes as far as the fan base goes. So here comes Johnny Ace and sits down in front of me. He goes, "Hey, man, what's going on?" I said, "Hey, Johnny, what's going on, man?" "Hold on a minute, Johnny." Stand up, took a picture, signed another autograph. "So what's going on, man?" He goes, "Oh, not much." He goes, "What are you doing here?" I said, "I came to see a wrestling show." He goes, "You bought a ticket?" I said, "My buddy bought a ticket for me." He said, "Why didn't you call me? Why didn't you call me to get tickets?" I said, "Johnny, your phone don't ring back."
Yeah.
I said, "I've tried that number, bro." I said, "It don't ring back." I said, "Excuse me, Johnny, hold on a second. Hey, how you doing, man?" You know, click, click, another autograph, you know. And he's sitting right in front of me. Hey, and he said, "Well," and then he asked the question, and I wasn't ready for it. He goes, "Won't you come in the back? Come in the back with me."
Yeah.
And I said, here's what went through my mind in a quarter of a second. I went, I'm going to get heat no matter what my next answer is. If I say, hey, man, thank you so much. It was good to see you, but I came to watch a show of my buddies here, that would have been heat because I didn't do what he asked me. And if I go in the back, I'm going to get heat, too, for Wise Buff here at our show.
Right.
So I was like, oh, my God, what do I do, what do I do? So I just went, oh, okay, man. So I walked to the back with him, and I talked for an hour. I talked to him. And here I am thinking, you know, this is going to be a positive outcome. I mean, I came, I spoke to everybody. They saw that I'm in shape. And you guys know from being in wrestling that wasn't no hasty decision. That was, wait a minute, who's in the crowd? Get a camera on him. Is he drunk? Is he sober? How does he look? Why is he here? Who's with him? Vince McMahon wouldn't sell that. Johnny Ace wouldn't sell that for $1 million.
Yeah.
So you know that wasn't just no, well, let me go see what Buff's doing. That was a major, major meeting of them coming out to see what the heck I was doing there.
Right.
So I came back and, like I said, in shape, looked good, you know, hello to everybody, what's up, and didn't work. As soon as Johnny said, okay, man, hang out back here, as soon as he left me, which was about an hour of us talking, I went straight back out and said, let's go. You know, we got up from the show, we left, you know, we didn't step on no toes or anything. He told me to call me the next day, and that was 3 months ago.
Yeah.
So, you know, I wrote it off. I just wrote him off as there's just, you know, they know where I'm at and they want me, they'll call. And you know, I try to watch the show as much as I can to figure out where they're going with storylines and stuff. And I still ain't quite figured that out.
It's
I really hadn't, dude.
You're among the majority of that.
I know, man. I swear I hate it. I just don't get it. I just really don't get it. I mean, God, last week, I mean, it was like somebody, I think Benoit against Eugene. And I went, Benoit and Eugene, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
I mean, I just don't get that. Call me crazy. Don't ever hire me. Fire me. Whatever you want to do. I don't get it. I don't get Benoit versus, excuse me, let me get the whole statement out, versus Eric Bischoff's something. Cousin, is that what he is?
Nephew.
Nephew. Yeah. Eric Bischoff's nephew, Eugene. And I said, where can I buy a ticket? I want to see that match. I mean, you got to be kidding me. I don't get it. So I can't watch it. You know, and then about 2 weeks ago, I try to watch Raw, 35 minutes into it, it's still a diva thing.
Mm.
And, I mean, I'm not a mark, but I want to watch a wrestling match every once in a while. I can watch, I mean, I don't mind looking at a few chicks here and there, but, I mean, I do want to see a match.
I agree with you.
And God, him being the only game in town, there shouldn't be one slack match, man. I mean, it should just be off the chain every night. And the reason why I know that is because that's what it used to be. Every match on Nitro meant something. It was big. Every match on Raw was it meant something. It was big. Here's only one company now. They're pick of the litter, and we've got Chris Benoit against Eugene.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't get that. So instead of trying to get it, I just turned it off.
Would you go back there if they called you, though?
I absolutely would. I think the problem is I don't think they pay me enough to go back, and not because I'm worth a lot of money. It's just because what I make in the independent world compared to what it would take, you know, for them to pay me up there, I just don't think you'll pay me a couple $100,000 a year. And that's probably what it takes for you to go back, minimum, because
right.
You're talking about $100,000 a year. These kids sign that contract, and they go, man, I am set. Brother, if you're a bodybuilder making $100,000 a year and your gimmick's your body, which is about 90% of WWE right now, is all the guys look incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you're talking about $100,000 don't go far, brother. You buy a new car, you buy a decent house, your wife quits working, you get taxed. You got to live on the road with rental cars, and this is a lot of things people don't know about wrestling. But we pay for our own rental car, own hotel. You got to eat on the road, tan on the road, train on the road. Brother, you are broke in a year.
Right.
It takes every bit of that $100,000 playing smart ball to live on that money. And these boys are four to a car up there, four to a room, and I just can't do that again. And to do that, I'd have to pay make more money to do it. And I just don't think he'd pay me that kind of money.
Okay.
I mean, I signed for $175 after making $750 at WCW.
Right.
Just to show I was a team player, I said, I'll do it for a year, and let's just see. I mean, I was going to go broke that 1 year just to show them I was a team. I lost $50,000 signing that contract. I could have stayed home and made another 50 and sit at home like everybody else did. And I had so much heat, we thought it'd be smart. Me and my agent thought it'd be smart to show that all the team player, sign early, don't sit at home, don't collect the 50 grand, don't make him pay the other 50 on your thing, just give him the 50, sign the deal, and go be a team player on fire for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
So, team player didn't work. And I'm not sure what would have. I mean, it was such a funny time and place for everything. I mean, you're talking about two major companies all having to go under the same roof, you know, and I was the first one in the door, not by choice, but just because my contract was ironically up the same time Vince took over. So here I was, you know, having to come in the door as somebody that was going to take a job away, whether it was the first match, middle of the card, or top of the card. Buff Bagwell was going to take somebody's job away, period. And so you're talking about I had heat with the whole company coming straight in the door. You know, and I mean, one of the youngest guys, one of the, you know, top names from WCW, and was going to be around for a long time, and I was like, you know, this is going to be hard. I mean, so even my friends up there wasn't really my friends anymore, and it was a tough position. You know, like I said, if I had to do it over, I'd have stayed at home and made the 50 to buy a little more time, and which has only been a couple of months, but still, it would have been, you know, worth it to see what would have settled. And instead, I went up there, and it just kind of everything just fell on my face. And then they, you know, they fired me in Atlanta, of all things. They, you know, I was like, and still never got the word fired. I was released.
Right.
Whatever that is, I had to raise my hand on that one. I said they brought me in the room. It was Johnny Ace and Vince and Jim Ross, and they were sitting in the room, you know, and I knew. So opened the door, I was like, oh boy,
yeah,
this ain't a meeting. Good meeting. So I sit down, didn't sell it or anything. I said, hey, guys, what's going on? They said, well, we need to – and they him all around for about 10 minutes to the point where I finally said, are y'all firing me? I didn't know what they were doing, where they were going with it. And they said, well, no, we're going to release you. Mm-hmm. They actually said, no, we're going to release you. And I said, so, okay. So I'm trying to sit there thinking. I kept thinking a little bit, like, first of all, I was amazed I was getting fired because, you know, that's a little shocking when you're – I mean, I said, forget being Mark Bagwell. You're Buff Bagwell on TV, and – that's not an easy person to fire, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, so I was sitting there trying to play it off, and I was trying to get my, you know, senses collected and everything, and I said, well, what y'all fight? Yeah, well, we're going to release you. And I said, well, so I let them talk, and I raised my hand. I said, well, what's the, and they said, well, you're not going to raise your hand, Mark. I said, well, I just want to make sure. I go, what is the difference of released or fired? And they had an answer. And it was a good one. They said, well, if we release you, we don't have to redo your contract. But if we fire you, we got to redo your contract when we bring you back in 3 months. Well, no comeback for that one. So I said, oh, okay, you know, great. So I'm thinking, what are they saying here? You know, am I gone? So finally, Jim Ross, the only time they messed up in the meeting of giving me another chance to talk was they said, Jim Ross said, if we could take the heat you've got backstage and put that heat out in the building, they said, we'd make $1 billion. And I said, well, why don't we?
Mm-hmm.
I said, that's the whole point. I said, I mean, here's Triple H having a, you know, make it with a girl, a dead girl in a casket to get heat. I got that kind of heat being nice. Let's push that kid that's got that heat. And me and Johnny Ace talked about it. I go, why is it? In the first time in my life, that all of a sudden having heat is a bad thing. I said, God, my whole life, everybody that had heat, especially in the wrestling world, forget Hollywood, forget Madonna, forget anybody that's got heat that gets pushed, whatever they're doing, you know, it was a good thing to be bad my whole career.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, when things really do happen bad to me and I get heat, it's bad to be bad. And I was like, why is that, Johnny? He goes, I don't know. That is weird. I said, well, you know, when y'all want somebody bad to be bad, give me a call. So I give up. But I did talk to Terry the other day about the TNA thing. I talked to him about a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I called him, and I said, man, I said, what's it take for everybody to remember 10 years of never missing a show, being Marcus Alexander Bagwell, breaking my neck, making it back in 10 months, those kind of things, what will it take for me to for people to remember that again and give me another chance? What will it take? And he said, well, he goes, first of all, he says, you're right. He goes, let me talk to Jeff and see. And I said, I'm not begging for a job. I said, I will if it'll work. I said, I'm letting you know that for heat purposes or whatever other reasons, I said, I just want to know. I said, so I know whether or not, because I know you guys are going to Spike, and I want to know if there's a chance to put me on TV. I said, I'd like to be on TV with you guys, you know. And so he said, well, let me get back in touch with you, blah, blah, blah. So, but, you know, I'd love to go back to just, you know what I miss more than anything is being part of something again.
Yeah.
I'm not part of anything, man. I go out to Vince, people go, who do you work for? And I go, everybody but Vince. That's my answer. Because I don't know. I can't tell you one initial. I can't tell you who I worked for last night. Their initials.
Right.
I tell you who paid me, guys named Tony Hawk. But I can't tell you if it's ICW, PWF, FDW. I don't have no idea. You know, I really don't. So I'm not really part of anything. I mean, man, when I was part of WCW, it was part of something, man. It was a team. It was successful. It was fun. It was cool. It was everything that you dream of. And I miss being part of something. I don't care if it's, you know, anything. I just want to be part of a team again and see results. I want to see results again, you know.
Right.
And I don't. I just go out and, you know, I wrestle for these different companies and just kind of, you know, just do all work for everybody. I don't really see a result out of one, you know, situation, and that's what I miss.
Yeah. Well, we're running out of time.
Like, okay. Well,
we're a little bit over.
Cut me off.
But, hey, we appreciated having you on the show. And
you'll have to do it again. Brother, anytime y'all want to do it, I'll do it. My Sunday's a great day for me, so I'm always off on Sunday. So anytime y'all want to do it again, we'll talk some more.
I'll
see you on October the 15th.
I definitely will for sure. And if anybody, let me throw the cheap plug out. If anybody will check my website out, therealbuff.com.
All right.
Show my calendar on there, and it shows where I'm at every month. So check it out.
All right. Buff Bagwell, guys.
Y'all be cool.
Weekly.
Thanks a lot, Les. See you, Doc.
See you,
Mark.
Bye.
Well, we are running out of time. We got to get going. TNA's Unbreakable pay-per-view just going on the air.
That'll be something for us to talk about next week.
Yes, we will. We will review it. We didn't get a chance to preview
all right,
it this
they
week.
Can check the website to see who the guest will be for next week.
Yes.
All right.
All right.
Cool.
Check out what Les is up to at lesthatcher.com and epwt.com. We want to thank WrestleTalk Radio for their help this week. We are out of here. Next week, we'll have a couple great guests for you. Check out the website at wrestlingweekly.com. Good night,
right,
everybody.
Doc, we'll see you.
Bye-bye.
Take care, brother.
You've been listening to Wrestling Weekly. Please join us again next Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern right here on WrestlingWeekly.com.